we continue our study of Romans with an examination of Romans 2, specifically God's judgment. Do you think you will escape God's judgment? How will God deal with your stubborn and unrepentant heart? What's your excuse for judging others while doing the same things? And what will be the basis of God's judgment? Here's Pastor Seth.
2 weeks ago, we started in Romans 1. We're going to do Romans chapter 2 today. I usually try to plan ahead on what I'm going to speak, usually about 6 months ahead of time on average. So if you're wondering why I'm talking about this today, that's one reason why. I think a second reason is because God wants to speak to us also today. And he's going to use Romans chapter 2 to do it. As I mentioned a couple weeks ago in Romans 1, that's a pretty grim chapter, especially the last half of Romans 1. And this whole idea in the secular world of God being a God of wrath or judgment just grates on secular man. And if you talk to a lot of secular people and say, what keeps you from believing in God? That's one of the things that's going to pop up pretty quick. I just don't believe in a God of wrath or a God of judgment. Now, you can talk to that same person tomorrow, and you can ask them, why don't you believe in God? What's keeping you? And they would say something like this, on this extreme over here, I don't believe in a God that would allow evil to go on in the world. And they can say each of these things without any indication of the contradiction in which they are saying, which they are speaking. There is a God of wrath, not because God is mean or because he doesn't have anything else to do, but because evil, if it's allowed to continue on over time, leads people, families, communities, states, countries, over a cliff. That cliff may not be immediate. It might take years or sometimes a lifetime. But the God who loves people is not going to allow us to continue on a road headed toward a cliff, even though we can't see the cliff, without trying to stop us in some way and veer us from self-destruction. God's wrath is not really that much different, his judgment, from our everyday lives. We have accountability in our culture. When I was a student, my parents expected me to do my homework. They expected me to turn in projects. They expected me to give my best effort on tests. And there were times in my growing up years where I was not really on board all that much with that. And I discovered that I didn't like grounding all that much, especially on a weekend, or being grounded for a month. You know, that judgment on me woke me up, that I cannot live like I have been and expect that life is going to go well. If you're a student and you're sort of just barely making it along through your grades, eventually, at the end of the year, you may not have any bit of judgment felt by you until you find out from the administration that you're going to be repeating the same grade you just spent a year taking. Judgment may be delayed, but it's coming. And when it comes, it's not because the administration's being mean. It is trying to wake you up to say you were on a self-destructive path, even though it may not seem like that to you, but I'm going to do something to try to wake you up and help you go on a very different path. A lot of our guys are in sales. You can't just show up at 10 and leave at 3:30 and not make your sales quotas. After a while, you're going to be updating your resume and getting back on monster.com looking for a new job. Maybe you have a job where it's a salaried job. And if you come in at 8:15 instead of 8 and leave at 5:45 instead of 6, and if your coffee breaks instead of 15 minutes or 25 minutes, and your lunch, 30-minute lunch, goes into 45 minutes, eventually your boss is going to sit you down and have a talk with you. as he should or she should. And they're going to say, this is what's required. And I hope you can do what's required, but if you can't, you're going to need to be finding another job. That's realistic life. That's how we live. If you're an athlete and you have a hard time abiding by the team rules, you may lose your spot as a starter. Or worse, you may lose a roster spot and have to join the chess club or something instead of your athletic team. If you're a citizen and you insist on driving over the speed limit and rack up some tickets, somebody is going to take away your driver's license. And the reason they do that is not because they're mean or they haven't gotten anything else to do. It's that what we've determined is that you are moving in a course that's going to be harmful to yourself and to others, and we're going to do something to try to minimize that damage. Now, for some reason, though we understand all of those examples in our life, somehow secular man somehow sees some dissonance between a legitimate accountability and a reckoning on our behavior, and somehow that's beneath God. The title of today's message is God's Judgment, and that's that'll be the first half of the message. And the second half of the message, as we go through the same chapter again with a different comb, will be on me. You mean God? I can see that God could judge others, but you mean to tell me that God could judge me? We'll look at God's judgment first. There are several ways that our culture sees God's judgment. One is that it's arbitrary. Romans 2, verse 2 says, "Now we know that God's judgment against those who do such things," and the such things are all the list of about 30 things that we looked at 2 weeks ago at the end of Romans 1, "do against those who do such things is based on truth." Now, the Bible is clear, as we looked in Romans chapter 1, that God puts his law into every person's heart. There is no one who doesn't know what to do. There's no one, the Bible says, in the final judgment will be able to rightly say, you know, I never knew you expected that. As Paul says, it's based on truth. Now, it took me until college to realize, and then really has helped me in grad school, that the most important question I asked, sadly, to my professors was, will this be on the test? I mean, I got to the place where I was just obnoxious about that. Because if I'm going to stay up all night studying for a midterm or a final, I don't want to study for something that's not going to be on the test. And so I have to ask. Now, most of the time, I got a straight answer from the professors. Sometimes our professors would give us an answer that we all, okay, that's not going to be on the test. And then it was. Oh, my goodness, you've never seen such anger or wrath on that. Well, here, he says, all the judgment is going to be based on truth, arbitrary. The second thing we saw is somehow that I'm excused from judgment. In my case, there's a reason why judgment shouldn't be. If you knew the kind of pain I've been gone through, you would never... Nobody would ever condemn me for the course of action that I've taken. Verse 3, Paul says, "When you, a mere man, pass judgment on them and yet do the same things, do you think you will escape God's judgment?" Now, he asks a rhetorical question. A rhetorical question is meant to say, this should be a no-brainer. There is going to be no escape of final judgment. Nobody's going to be able to find the excuse door that sort of gets around the big line of people waiting to enter final judgment. There is no Disneyland fast pass regarding final judgment. The third thing that I sense from folks in our culture is that God's judgment is capricious. Capricious. It's almost like this person suspects that God is sort of like a spoiled brat that didn't get his way, and he's just going to kind of throw a fit, throw a temper tantrum. That's how some in our culture think of God's wrath. Paul says in verse 5, "Because of your stubbornness and your unrepentant heart, you are storing up wrath against yourself for the day of God's wrath, when his righteous judgment will be revealed." not capricious, not undeserved, his perfect, according to justice, according to righteousness. A fourth way that our culture thinks of God's judgment is that it's too subjective. Too subjective. About 20 years ago, we watched the O.J. Simpson trial, and that trial was so fascinating for so many different reasons. But one of them was just the personalities of the people involved. How many of you remember Judge Lance Ito? Okay, now he became, this is a tough trial, but he became sort of this pincushion in the news for the different renderings that he was making, or many of the renderings he just never made at all, and the confusion that was going on. It seemed like to many court observers that his judgment in the case was quite subjective. Not so with God. Verse 6, God will give to each person according to what he has done. As simple as that. Now, I have, in my background, I had straight A's as a student in kindergarten. In first grade, second grade. Now, after second grade, there was a shift into third grade, and the shift was something like this. I discovered that if I talked in class, that other kids thought that was pretty funny, and they kind of liked that. And so I began a new shift in behavior the first 6 weeks of third grade, and on the Tuesday of grade cards coming out after 5 weeks and a couple days, I asked the teacher what was on the grade card that we're going to get. And one of the things that was on there was, more than just spelling and math, conduct. Conduct. I thought, uh-oh, never saw this coming. I asked the teacher, what is conduct? She took her opportunity with myself to give me a plethora of examples of how she's going to be judging conduct. When she was done, I thought, I am toast. And my mother and my father are not going to be happy with this. Now, this was Tuesday. So on Wednesday, when I showed up, I suddenly became the model pupil. Had my book open and my paper and my little pencil and my little pencil bag and my little Elmer's glue. And I was most attentive, and I was asking pertinent questions. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. At the end of the day, Friday, we got our report cards. And we used to get our report cards in this manila sleeve. You sort of pull it out of the sleeve. And I did pretty good on the different subjects. But I scanned down to conduct, and I had an F. And I was mortified. And after everybody left, I went up to Mrs. Pfister. Still remember her name. Mrs. Pfister. I said, but Mrs. Pfister, what about the last 3 days? She said, Mr. Gatchell, what about the last 5.5 weeks? I was judged, rightly, according to what he has done, what I had done. Sometimes people think in our secular world that judgment is biased. That God has sort of his teacher's pets, or at least that's how some Christians sort of portray themselves. And sort of there's this residue in the air, this aroma of maybe God is like that and not fair. Verse 7, Paul says, to those who by persistence in doing good seek glory, honor, and immortality, he will give eternal life. Those who are self-seeking and reject the truth and follow evil, there will be wrath and anger. There will be trouble and distress for every human being who does evil, first for the Jew, then for the Gentile. But glory, honor, and peace for everyone who does good, first for the Jew, then for the Gentile. Verse 11, for God does not show favoritism. Nobody's got an inside track on this, that God is somehow unfair. And here, what I hear from people is something along this line. Sort of the idea is, I know I'm not perfect, but I do some good things, And those some good things should outweigh the bad things that I've done. I hear that a lot in our culture. I've heard that a lot for a number of decades from folks. Verse 16, this will take place in the day when God will judge men's secrets. Not just our deeds, not just our words, our secrets, the thoughts of our heart. He will judge our hearts as well. Now, why would he do that? Because he knows that my actions, my words, my thoughts, and my secrets left to myself all lead me towards a cliff. And unless something is done about that, where I can even see of my movement in the wrong direction, I eventually am going to go over a cliff. I may go over several cliffs in this life, and then one really big cliff after my life is over. And I may take some people with me. Now, for some people, this just seems so hard to understand. But we are this way in our daily life anyway. Let's say you've been a model employee at a retail store for 10 years. You're there when you open the door. You're there in the end to lock up when you're supposed to lock up. You're pleasant with all the customers. You're respectful of the boss. And for 10 years, you are there. If you need overtime, you're there to do that. And let's say that you go through a time where your wife or husband lost their job and money is really tight. And one day when nobody else is there, you're getting ready to close up, you take some money out of the register. $100. Got to eat. Got to pay some bills. Don't know what else to do. Now, if your boss finds out on a security camera or otherwise that you stole money, $100, out of the cash register, what's going to happen? Probably the boss, if you've been there for 10 years, is going to sit down with you and talk with you quite frankly about this. Thankfully, you have a good track record. But just this one item is now going to create a mess for you. And if this happens, if he is graceful with you and allows you to continue with your job, but if this happens again 5 years later, only two times, you are going to be looking for another job. That's realistic in our world. It's realistic from human beings and accountability. I don't know why it's so hard for us to understand that for a righteous God, that would somehow be beneath him. Well, that's what the Romans 2 has to say about judgment. Now, this passage, the way Paul wrote this chapter is God's judgment and what about me? God's judgment, what about me? God's judgment, what about me? Etc. So if you want to go back and read through here, that's what you're going to read. For the purpose of today's message, I wanted to parcel out the God's judgment part and contrast that with how secular man thinks. And now we're going to look at the personal part of this as, why would God judge somebody like me? Okay, so we're going to go back through many of these same verses today. Now, when Paul wrote this about 2,000 years ago, for the most part, the world looked at itself as comprised of two general groups of people, the Jewish world and the Gentile world. This was particularly true from the Jewish perspective. And the Jewish people looked at themselves as the chosen people, and they tended to look at the Gentiles as the people who were obviously in need of judgment. They were unreligious and just did whatever they wanted to, but we have the law and we have religious ceremony and we have circumcision and we know who Yahweh is. And it's very easy for the Jewish people to look down on the Gentile people, to brag and feel superior and to be critical in their thoughts towards the Gentile world. Now, in our world today, 2,000 years ago, the same thing goes on, but with a different cast of characters. In our world today, there are plenty of people, whether they be religious or irreligious, religious or secular, religious or of any stripe, who can look at other people and be critical of them and feel superior can look at the things they do, those people do, and say, well, I don't do those things, and sort of lift yourself up to a morally superior position to be critical. And we are mostly blind to what we do. Now, this is really not so far removed from our everyday life. Think about this. How many times when you go to church, and you, whether it's here or somewhere else, and you hear a message, how many Sundays do you say to yourself, man, I wish my husband had been here to hear this message. Man, I wish my wife had been here to hear this message. Man, I wish my parents had been here to hear this message. Man, I wish my teenagers had been here to hear this message. Man, I wish my neighbors had been here to hear this message. Man, I wish my boss had been here to hear that message. Man, I wish my mother-in-law had been here to hear this message. None of these are personal illustrations. You hear sort of the attitude behind that? I can clearly understand why judgment is going to be poured out on those people. But boy, I have a hard time seeing how that's really pertinent to me. Now, you don't have to be religious or unreligious to feel that way. And that's what Paul says as we comb through Romans chapter 2 a second time. Verse 1, he starts out the chapter, you therefore have no excuse, you who pass judgment on someone else. For whatever point you judge the other, you are condemning yourself. In other words, if I find myself being critical of somebody else or a group of people, that should be a warning on the dashboard light that there's something also wrong with me. But we kind of are blind to that particular light on the dashboard. We just sort of